awesome music. That was John Anderson, Candle Song. You're listening to Sound Health on VBS Radio. I'm your host, and with us today is going to be Bruce Lipton, a very powerfully gentle man. He's going to be bringing us information and ideas about sound health and how to make your day a little brighter, to add some information to your life and to allow your community to experience the authentic you. We'll be with Dr. Bruce Lipton and talk to him about his extraordinary life in just a few minutes right after these announcements. Sound Health here on BBS Radio is brought to you by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. Each week we attempt to share with you some of the research we're doing here at the Institute as we look at low-frequency sound and its influence on living systems. We use the mathematical patterns, the frequencies of the body, via vocal samples to help you reverse your own disease and other kind of fun things. Again this week, we have been playing with distorting time with frequency. We even got our attorney involved, and once he heard we could do this and he could do more with less time, he wanted to try it. He was really pleased, but we really didn't do that study so people could work more. We did it just to see if we could and to delight ourselves, to see if we could do something new for the planet. We want to share that with you, and we'll be talking about that more on other shows as we go on. Also this week, we've been continuing our research on the immune system, and in particular diabetes. As many of you know, we've been looking at not at the genetics of disease, although that's a good place to start. We've been looking at the proteins and how those protein signals work in the body as biochemical receptors. This week, we had this phenomenal case cross our path, of which we are very grateful that he came in. But a lot of you remember Dr. Russ Rudy, who originally came to us with a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. And if you're not familiar with that, you can watch him on video on YouTube. Just YouTube, YouTube.com. Just look under our name, Sound Health, or Russ Rudy. And you can see how we helped him use low-frequency sound from his vocal print to help his body reverse his disease. Well, anyway, as he was regrowing all of these nerves in his legs, he started to experience stiff legs, stiff muscles, especially when he was sitting for a long time and if it got cold. So he came back in, and we looked at his vocal print again. Not this time for the multiple sclerosis, because he doesn't have multiple sclerosis anymore, but we started looking at why the biochemistry of his legs were causing his muscles to be really, really stiff. And we found out that there really is something called stiff man syndrome, and it's caused by a problem with acetylcarnitine, threonine, and serine. So as we were looking at Dr. Rudy's vocal print, we found that his receptors for using glutamic acid that has to do with phenylalanine and serine had been closed. I guess I don't know any other word to say that other than they weren't accepting the biochemistry of the body. They weren't accepting the signals. So we used sound to open those and have been very successful with not only him but several other people this week of being able to get rid of the pain of fibromyalgia and just when they were sitting stiff or just in stiff pain using the frequencies and the math of the voice. I am so excited about this because we have so many people who are in pain and just try to accept this as, oh, I'm getting old, that's why I'm getting stiff and when I try to get up and can't get up out of a chair. So I love the idea of being able to carry on this research project. I love the ideas math is medicine and emotions is math, and we're going to learn more about that with our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton. As I said, a powerfully gentle person who through his writings about his own experiences has changed our belief and ourselves. And I think that's why we all should be on the planet. Dr. Lipton, welcome to the show.
Terry, it's so wonderful to talk with you again. I think we got together about 20 years ago or something. Has that been it, the time?
Oh, we were here about a year ago and did another show together.
No, when we first got together, when all the stuff that we're talking about was like kind of weird, but now it's coming mainstream, so it's much more exciting to be here.
It's been so long, I don't remember. It seems like we've just always known each other. You know, we have one of those kind of relationships that no matter how much time goes by, we're still at the same place.
Absolutely, because we're on the same harmony. I think that's what it's all about, playing the same tune.
I love that. Thank you. And thank you for writing this book that we're going to talk about, Biology of Belief, The Science of How Thoughts Control Life. Hard question. What's wrong with the way we humans think that someone needs to write such a book?
Well, because our thinking is also involved with our experiences and our programming, and as the book really goes into emphasizes that we are all very powerful people, and yet we find ourselves in so much trouble from day to day just trying to keep healthy and just keep ourselves moving along, and it sort of doesn't make sense. If we're that powerful, then how come we have so much trouble? And it turns out our powers are in our beliefs, and most of us were programmed with limiting or self-sabotaging or very destructive beliefs, not so much perhaps by intention, just by habit, people passing down beliefs from generation to generation. And these beliefs got programmed into our subconscious mind primarily during the first 5 years of our lives, where the mind was very receptive to recording experiences. The mind was actually functioning in more or less a hypnotic trance for the first 5 years of our lives. And this is actually nature's intention, because consciousness is our creative mind. Can't work without any data. So, I mean, for example, I give people the analogy, let's say, Sherry, I buy you a new iPod and you take it out of the box and you push play and nothing happens. And you say, oh no, you have to put the programs in there, then you can push the play. Well, the brain is something similar to that. I mean, if a newborn was, you're able to communicate with a newborn, they're just born, you say, well, think about something, there'll be a long pause because there's no data to think about. The baby was just born, there's nothing to think about. So it's sort of like an iPod, you have to program it first, and then you can think by using the data in the program. Well, all this really comes down to is a very important fact, that the primary programs that come into our mind were programmed into our mind for the first 5 years of our lives, and they're programs that we acquired from other people, observing other people and downloading their behaviors and downloading their beliefs and their responses to life, and those become our fundamental behavior patterns. Well, the problem is they're copied from other people. And once we start to get around six and we start to become conscious, we become more creative in our life using our conscious mind. But unfortunately, most of the creation comes from the programs in the subconscious mind, which, as we now know, are very limiting and self-sabotaging for ourselves. I find it very fun. I teach down below the equator in Australia and New Zealand a lot. And they talk about this critical period of child programming, the first 5 years. They refer to it as cutting the tall poppies. And what they mean by that is when a gardener grows poppies and puts the seeds in, all the poppies grow up about the same height, then every now and then some poppy grows like a foot or two above all the other poppies, so the gardener, to make the garden look pretty, cuts the heads off the tall poppies. Well, what they refer to child development in this regard, what they're saying is, when a child shows some exceptional characters and qualities, there's a tendency on the part of the immediate population and family and community is to cut their heads off and make everybody average. And so basically, what we find is child development period is really a period of acquiring a lot of limitations. All we have to do is go back and just listen to some of the things parents say to kids when they're very young, like, oh, you're not smart enough, you don't deserve things, you're not lovable, you're a sickly child, you're not good enough, or whatever. These are the kind of things that parents say, sometimes saying them, of course, trying to stimulate the child to do better, but not realizing a very important fact, that when a child is 5 years or under, anything it hears is just downloaded as a program, because the child's consciousness isn't working yet. It really starts kicking in around six. Very interesting. It's not a new idea that the first 5 years are so fundamental in programming our lives, because the Jesuits, for hundreds and hundreds of years, have always very been proud of the by saying, give us a child until it's 5 or 6, and it will belong to the church for the rest of its life. They were quite aware of something that we're now really owning and realizing. It's the first 5 years of our programming that determines the rest of our lives. And this is what we have to learn. We have to identify that these programs that we got, and most of them we got were unaware of them, because a large part of the programming occurred while we were still in fetal development, and up through the first 2 years are where the primary programming comes in. And we're really not able to be conscious of the programs that went in, and yet these are the programs that run our lives. And so it's really an unfortunate situation that we're really being programmed to be less powerful by beliefs that other people have given us.
I'm going to ask you many more questions about that, but I want to ask, do you have grandbabies?
Yes, I do.
Do you notice how much more smart and much more bright they were than when we had these opportunities when we were our age? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and I'm very proud of my daughter and my son-in-law, because for a long time I used to talk about my stuff, my new biology, and my daughter thought it was kind of weird because she was in the conventional world, and of course I was outside of the conventional world. And yet it was really fun because she did listen to the important part about the necessity of programming and what you say to a child and how that really determines the rest of their life. So I see that my kids, as well as many, many children that are having babies now, are really recognizing that they have an opportunity to make a very powerful child if they don't limit them with beliefs that sabotage them.
They just seem much brighter just as children. I just don't remember being that bright.
I think we encourage that in our world now, because we're going through a very strange time right now, and it's scary for some people, but it's really a very important evolution that's going on, a biological evolution. So the crises that we see are just signaling the end of an old way of being, and we're beginning a new way of living in our world. And I think you're seeing that in the kids, because that's part of the new expression, recognizing the intelligence of our children and feeding them that intelligence rather than thinking, oh, hey, they're just little infants, what do they know? No, they're very bright. So this is a good change for us.
How do we get rid of all this old programming junk?
Well, I think that's a great question, but I think it also, I want to start off by answering that question by talking about something and then coming to that, I hope. And basically it says this, is that most everybody out there on the street believes that we're running our lives with our conscious desires. I say, you know, what do you want from life, Sherry? And whatever your answer is, I know it's coming from your conscious mind, because the conscious mind is a very creative mind. It's the one connected to our source, our spirit, our identity. But it's also the mind that has our desires and our wishes and our aspirations of life. So I say, yes, the conscious mind has all our wishes in it. And what we now find out from neuroscience is the conscious mind only runs our life about 5% of the time. That 95% of our day is actually controlled by the programs in the subconscious mind. And that brings up the issue that I said, well, most of the programs in the subconscious mind came from other people, and many of those programs are limiting or self-sabotaging. And now we find out that 95% of our lives come from that unconscious programming. So it becomes very difficult for us to get what we want in our life, because that's the conscious mind's program, and that only works 5% of the time. 95% of the time, we're frequently challenging what we desire in our conscious mind with the programs that we got loaded with in our subconscious mind. So, and one last aspect about that, and it's a very important part, because, again, we believe we run our lives with our conscious mind, and then we find that we sometimes have trouble getting the things we want, health or happiness or good jobs or whatever it is. And this is what we wanted in our conscious mind, and we don't get it, and then we feel like, oh, my God, I'm a victim, because my desire is to have all these things, and I'm not getting them, so must be forces outside of me that are preventing me from getting to my goal. And here's why I'm bringing all these words up, is to say this, is that inevitably when the subconscious mind runs, it's called the unconscious mind. You don't see it operate. To illustrate the point in my lectures, I usually say, to the audience, I say, I'm sure you probably have a friend that you know, and you know that friend's parent, and you recognize that your friend's behavior is pretty close to their parent's behavior. And so one day you casually acknowledge, you go, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you have to back away from Bill as he vents, you know, like, how can you say I'm like my dad? And I bring this up because a lot of people laugh in the audience because they're very familiar with that. But I say, no, this is a very profound point. And the point is this. Everyone else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. It's only Bill who doesn't see that. And it's an emphasis point. It says that we very infrequently are we aware of our subconscious behaviors when they're playing. So when there's people get surprised when they hear other people describe them because it's like, I don't know who you're talking about. All this comes down to the point. We create our lives with our mind. But only 5% comes from the conscious mind, which has the desires and wishes that we want. And 95% comes from the programs in the subconscious mind, which are primarily from other people and limiting. And we don't see those programs generally. So basically, they're invisible. And then we walk on the street and think, my God, I'm just a victim of forces that I don't understand because I'm not getting to where I want to go. And then comes the answer to your question. Well, the limitations of where we go are really the programs in the subconscious mind. And those are the ones that prevent us from going places because those are the ones who usually say we're not good enough or capable enough or smart enough or whatever it is to get that. And those are the programs that are running 95% of the day. And until we change those programs, then we become victims of the programs. And they're invisible. So it just seems like, oh, my God, my life's not going my way I want it, and I don't know why. I have all these very positive thoughts, and nothing's working. And the problem is because, first of all, positive thoughts are the conscious mind's job, and that only works 5%, and we're still vying against the programs that operate 95% of the time, generally derived from our parents and family and community. So the question is, how can you change this program? So there, just very briefly, there are three different basic modalities to change programs, and here's what they are, with this very first important caveat. We've always held the belief that the conscious mind, subconscious mind, are connected with each other. That kind of belief is the one that says, if you go to a psychologist and you review your life and you find that your dad did this and your mom did that and your friend did this, and then you sit there with this conscious awareness of, wow, no wonder my life stinks. Look at all the things that have happened. There was always the belief that if you become aware of that, then your behavior will now change and you'll be good again. And it turns out that rarely, if ever, happens. And the reason is this. It turns out that the conscious and subconscious minds are not connected in that way. They learn in different processes and they operate using different mechanisms. So there's no real connection. And a lot of people think if we just talk to ourselves, you know, I'm going to give myself a good talking to. And they find how frustrating that is over time because they keep repeating the same behaviors that they keep telling themselves not to do. And it's like, Jesus, it's just always happening. It's a habit. And that's what the subconscious mind is, habits. And the issue is because when we talk to ourselves, there's a vision that there's somebody listening to what we're saying. And we presume, although there must be in the subconscious some listening agent that can listen to me, say, I don't want to do this, and therefore change the behavior. And it turns out, the subconscious mind is like a machine. It's just a record device, and you push the button, and it plays back the recordings, habits, plays them back. And so the issue about that is we've had a misperception that we could, you know, just change our programming by talking to ourselves, and it turns out that's not very effective, effective at all, that we actually have to do a process. So three processes to changing beliefs. One, Buddhist mindfulness. Meaning, if you don't let your mind wander, your conscious mind, because your conscious mind can think into the future and think into the past, your conscious mind can solve problems. So the conscious mind usually gets involved with doing all the thinking stuff. Well, the problem is if the conscious mind is thinking about anything but at the present moment, if the conscious mind is thinking about the past or the future or working on a problem in your head, by definition, your biology is then controlled by your subconscious because the job of the subconscious is to control everything the conscious is not paying attention to. So when our mind wanders, which it does 95% of the day, then essentially the subconscious is running the show. So basically it says, if you remain conscious, meaning you don't let your mind wander and you stay here and you observe yourself and reflect upon what you're doing in the world, live time, then you don't rely on the programs. And that's when you actually control your life. And it's interesting because what I tell people in my lectures is, I'm sure most people, at least if they're adults out there, there was a period, I'm going to venture to say, there was a period in your life where you actually were mindful, using Buddhist mindfulness and being conscious all the time. And I would suggest, when I tell you when that point is, that you might tell me when you were doing this, that this was the happiest, the healthiest part of your life, the time you had the most energy, the time when life ran beautiful, and it was just a joy to be here. And I say, if you can go back and find a time where you really fell in love, you'll find that that honeymoon period of the beginning of that relationship was a period where your life was healthy and happy and energized and everything was going your way. And I say, what was unique about the honeymoon period that wasn't the same before that period and generally also disappears? What was unique about the honeymoon period? And the answer is you become so self-conscious and so self-reflective as you're trying to tie this bond with this other person that you don't want to let your automatic behavior slip up. So you become observant. You think about the things you're going to say. You watch, the day before you meet this love of your life, I say, how long did it take you to get dressed? You say, I was out of the house in 10 minutes. I say, you're going to go on a first date with this person. It could be the love of your life. How long does it take you to get dressed? It might be 2 hours. And so what's the difference between yesterday and today? And it's like, oh, today I'm being self-reflective. I'm not letting the automatic programs run because I want to be the best image of myself for this partner to sell myself to this relationship. And guess what? During that time period where you're observing yourself and being conscious, you then start to find out that everything you're doing is creating a fabulous life. You're creating what you want. It's only when the honeymoon period wears off, when your life gets too busy and your mind starts to then start thinking about the job and paying the bills and all the details of your life, so your conscious mind starts all of a sudden losing track of the moment, starts thinking about things, that you start kicking into the old habits again. And that, it's always fun because at the end of that honeymoon period, what usually happens is your partner or someone's partner looks and says, who is this person I married? Because all of a sudden the behavior is completely different. And it's interesting because that behavior was always in there. It was in their subconscious, but they didn't let it play because they were being conscious. And when their consciousness slips away into thought and they start playing the tapes, they're actually playing other people's behavior, and that leads the partner to say, who is this person I married? Because now it seems like they're two different people. And that's just a reflection of what happens when you're operating in consciousness versus when you let it go back to automatic again. So being conscious is usually, when we've done that, has been the best part of our lives. We could do this our whole life, but it takes training. The two other ways of changing the subconscious: recognize that the subconscious is a machine and you have to do a process or set the machine to rewrite the programs. One of them is clinical hypnotherapy, which gets the brain into an EEG state that was the dominant brain state in the first 5 years of your life, which is theta. And theta is the hypnagogic trance state. So a child for the first 5 years is in a hypnotic trance downloading programs. Well, if you can get yourself back into that theta state, then you're back at an opportunity where you can then reprogram your beliefs, because that's the same state that you get programs in. So clinical hypnotherapy is a way of getting there. And what I find most exciting is a whole new field of healing modalities that are collectively called energy psychology. And energy psychology are ways of changing the belief systems that change beliefs in a matter of only minutes. I mean, a belief that has hobbled you your whole life, you can rewrite in 10 or 15 minutes and walk away a new person. And energy psychology, there's so many different varieties. A lot of them go by letters like EFT or TFT or EMDR. Some are holographic repatterning, body talk. One I'm familiar with is Psych-K. And all these modalities have one thing in common. They essentially provide for a super learning state, the kind of super learning state where individuals that get in and that can read a book in 5 minutes upside down and get everything that's in that book. The super learning state is an unbelievably fast processing state, and if we can get into that, you can go into the brain's processor and actually rewrite your history of files and change the programs. And so these are exciting ways of pushing the record button on that tape recorder called the subconscious mind, allowing you to put in new programs. A whole variety of different modalities. I mentioned you can actually go on my website, BruceLipton.com, and there's in the menu there's a thing called resources. And if you click on that, you'll find, oh my God, and there's a whole list of new ways of getting into that subconscious and rewriting the program so the subconscious works for us. I think it's an important point right now I'm saying that. We've always held the belief that a lot of people that say, oh, the subconscious, that's that dark, scary place, that Freudian hell that's in there. And it turns out that's really blaming the machine incorrectly. The subconscious is a tape player. It records and plays tapes. The tapes that it records and plays are not the fault of the machine. It's the programming that we get. So basically, the subconscious can be your best ally. If you would put in the subconscious all the kinds of programs like win-win and love programs and harmony and health programs and power programs that support you, if you would program those kinds of beliefs into the subconscious, then guess what? 95% of the day, you would automatically be rising up in life and being healthy and happy and harmonious and being very successful without even thinking about it, because the subconscious mind will do it automatically. It's doing it automatically right now, but unfortunately, the programs that most of us have are programs that take away from our power and our viability. And yet the same machine can be programmed with beliefs that will encourage health and harmony and success. So rather than blaming the subconscious, it's really the programming of the subconscious that is the critical point.
We do that with sound and frequency of dopamine.
Absolutely. Many different ways to enter into the system. Mm-hmm. That's why we have so many different sensory systems, and that's because the human biology reads all the different fields of sight, sound, smell, touch, taste, all these different. So any way you can put data in, through any of those portals, you can influence the programming. And that's why there's just so many wonderful modalities that come from different approaches, and yet all are very effective in the end. And sound healing is very critical, because that's putting the emphasis on the quantum mechanics and the physics of change. And so it's really important to recognize that vibration is what quantum physics recognizes is what shapes our material reality. So vibration is primary in creating the physical plane.
In looking at people who are in love and so open and so joyous, that's the frequency that was the epitome of what they were all displaying.
And absolutely.
And it turned out to be dopamine, so we just turn around and use that to program again. What's number three on your list?
Well, no, number three was energy psychology. It's actually Buddhist mindfulness, clinical hypnotherapy, and energy psychology. But there's so many other things that I can add to that. There are affirmations that you can do. You've got to do it in a habitual form, because the subconscious learns by habit. And so some people think, well, I had a positive thought. And I'm thinking, that's not a habit. To make a habit, you have to do it as like a process. And it, when you habitualize a behavior, it becomes programmed and then automatic and then invisible. And that's the fun part about it, because once you put in the right kind of programs that help you, you never have to even think about it. It becomes automatic. I mean, think about it this way. When, at least I'm old enough to remember when cars didn't have seatbelts in it. And when the law came in for seatbelts, what a pain that was. Everybody, oh, I got to go ahead and click the damn bell. And it's like, angry of like, you have to do this because you never did this. Well, I don't know how many years it's been now, but it's interesting, because now the habit of the belt is such a habit, you don't think about it. And in fact, if you don't have the safety belt on, your biology will say, oh, it doesn't feel right, and will actually get your consciousness to kick in to put the seatbelt on. So what was a struggle in the beginning later becomes automatic without you even having to work on it, and the system will even come and get you to have you pay attention to make sure it's working properly. So it says, if you loaded your subconscious with the kinds of programs that generate health and harmony and happiness, then that means you could essentially daydream the rest of your life away, and you'll find yourself on the top of the pile, because the program will automatically get you there without you even thinking. That's the greatest thing in this world, because almost everything else we do is like, well, you got to work hard and you got to practice, you got to do all this. And the fun part is, once you put a belief in, you can let go of it, because now that it's in the subconscious, it does it automatically. So it's really an exciting way of recognizing that we can regain power over our lives.
So we only keep ourselves limited.
Well, that's the truth. You know, when I talk in the lectures, I talk about spontaneous healing, how people that are, you know, on their deathbed and everybody counts them out and all of a sudden they're healthy and the cancer or whatever it is just disappeared. Or I talk about people who walk on hot coals and don't get burned, as compared to other people who walk on those coals and get burned severely. And say, well, who were the people genetically different that walked on the hot coals? Of course not. Or I talk about the numbers of incidences where there's a car accident and a woman lifts up a car to help her child or someone get out from under a car. And you think about a woman, untrained athlete, lifting 1,000 pounds or more. Was she like a superwoman or something like that? No, just a regular person, but can lift a car. And one of the things I also add is, down in the South in the United States, we have Baptist fundamentalists work themselves up into a religious ecstasy and then testify that God protects them by doing kinds of weird things like playing with copperheads and rattlesnakes, poisonous vipers. And they testify that, look, God protects me from these vipers. And even if they get bitten, they don't have any of the consequences. But the case that I'd like to bring out, which I talk about in my lecture, is many of these people, in testifying that God protects them, actually drink strychnine in toxic doses and have no harmful effect. And then I say, now look, here's a person who drinks poison and has no problem. Here's a person who can lift up a car. Here's a person that walks across hot coals. Here's a person that can completely reverse a terminal illness and walk away in total health. And I say, these are average people, and they're not genetically different. The only thing that's different are their belief systems. And what it basically says is, we can all do these things. And yet, the problem is, almost all of us have programs that say, no, you can't. And if we have a program that says we can't, then we are limited because we can't do those things. So it turns out, we are very powerful creators, and our only limitations are self-imposed belief systems, but unfortunately, they're belief systems that were primarily programmed into us before we were five, so we really weren't around to be in charge of that, but we're living the rest of our lives with the limitations that those beliefs provided. So the reality is, humans are the most powerful creators that can be imagined. And then you look at the world and you say, well, if we're all very powerful creators, then how come there are very, very powerful people out there and there are other people who have no power at all? Where did those powerful people get all the extra power from? And it turns out, they didn't get any extra power. All of us are equally powerful. What they did is they took away the power from us so that they appear more powerful. And that's the lesson we have to learn. We're all powerful people, but we've been disempowered by the programming. And if we can go through the process and change those programmings, we can recover those powers and be the creators that history and the Bible even talk about. I mean, this is I wasn't born in a Christian tradition, but Jesus' story was specifically said, look, all these miracles that I do, you can do them even better than I can. Your problem, you don't believe you can. And it comes down to just a simple solution as that. We can do all the miracles. The problem is our programs take away the belief that we can. And since we become a manifestation of the program, then we are totally disempowered individuals as we find ourselves today.
I think the success of the movie, The Secret,
yes,
shows that people are ready, but there is an issue with that. Lots of, for people who've never heard of it, which is probably unheard of, The Secret says you can have exactly what you want, that you are this powerful person.
Sherry, you're familiar with this old phrase, be careful of what you ask for, you may get it?
Yes, that's where I was going.
Well, I find this is the biggest problem, that people don't realize what they're asking for and the consequences of it, and don't recognize that the things they're asking for, in the end, may not even be what the hell they really want. Except that it seems what they want because people sell them on the idea, you know, in the world, oh, you must have this and all this. And it turns out the things that people really want aren't even tangible in most cases. It's really just love and harmony and health. And that's an internal process controlled by our own belief systems. And the issue is, I think too many people looked at The Secret thinking, oh my God, I could be a millionaire and have five cars and an airplane if I understood The Secret. And it's sort of like, I don't think you understood The Secret.
Well, I think The Secret is limited in what it says to people because it doesn't give you a way to know what's really inside, what you really want, what your real belief systems are.
It doesn't really even bring up the fact that that when they're selling you the idea of The Secret, they're feeding your conscious mind with desires and wishes and aspirations. That's what I said the function of the conscious mind is. But they did not acknowledge in the movie, yeah, but your conscious mind's not running the show. That's why you can't get to The Secret, because they didn't even tell you that, well, it's your subconscious that's running the show. And that doesn't, just because you saw the movie, that didn't change the program in the subconscious mind. It's still the same limiting program you've had in there since you were programmed.
And at the same time, we have to make room for people around us. I had a lady come up to me right before a show, and she said, I'm going to be your guinea pig for the show. And I was kind of surprised, and I said, by whose authority? And she said, by mine. The Secret told me I can have what I want, so I'm going to be on stage with you. And, you know, and I had already chosen, because she was coming up at the last minute, and I found somebody else to volunteer. But she was very unaware that she needed to do what she needed to do for herself within the confines of other people's rights at the same time.
Absolutely. This is the big part of the problem, is because we've also been programmed to see each other as individual separate elements, and the whole community of people as just separate human beings all out there in the field, when it turns out this is a completely, you know, misunderstood reality, that humanity, the human civilization, is a one living organism, and we're like cells in the body. And the significance of us as individual cells is that the whole secret of life is learning to live in harmony. And if you think you can create harmony because this is what you want and you're going to tell everybody else what to do, well, then you're in a very serious problem, because the only person you can control is your own self. And The Secret didn't really emphasize is that it is not your place or your ability even to control other people. You have control over yourself. And this really lets a lot of people down, because a lot of those wishes that people think in The Secret really involve, you know, influencing other people. It's like, no, you can take care of yourself, and you can get there if you know how to handle yourself, but you can't get there by manhandling somebody else, like telling Sherry, I'm the one. It's sort of like, well, that's a nice idea, but that's, you can take care of yourself, but you can't tell Sherry what's important.
Do you have any idea? I want to talk to you about 1,000 things here. Do you have a secret of how people find their place in the universe?
Well, I think basically you go into your conscious mind. That's the daydreaming mind. That's the mind that has visions and wishes. And you can go in there and try to manifest what you would like to see. If you understand what you would like to see, then, and here's the interesting thing, people say, well, how do I know what programs I have in the subconscious mind? The answer is that you don't know, actually. There's no way to catalog the programs, but I can tell you a way you can visualize. And the answer is this. Your life that you're living at this moment is a printout of the programs in your subconscious mind, because the subconscious mind is controlling 95% of the show. So whatever's going on in your life is a printout. And what does that mean? It says, well, the things that are going well in your life, your subconscious mind has programs to acknowledge that these are suitable and, you know, good for you to have in your life. The things where you have trouble in your life almost always reflect a program that prevents you from going there. So it's really neat. So you don't have to go over your whole history and analyze yourself to death. All you have to do is look at your life at the current moment, say what is working, and recognize, good, those programs are intact because I have them. And then recognize the things that are not working in your life are almost inevitably due to conflicting programs that you got in your subconscious from other people that really won't allow you to get there unless you change those programs. So basically, it's, oh, good, now I can find out what I need to change, because I can look at my life and say, this is what I want to change. The beautiful part about programming and changing mind is you can do it anytime. So you can have a belief today and say, this is what I want. And that's why, you know, we talked about be careful what you ask for, because sometimes then you get it and you go, oops, I didn't think about all these other things that would come with that. And the beautiful part about this new consciousness stuff is, oh, well, at that moment, go back into your mind and rewrite it and reprogram it and compensate for this and keep adjusting this as you go on your course. And what you will ultimately do is direct your course to a final destination where you get and have and experience those things you were really looking for.
Two things I'm totally intrigued about in your book. One of them you just talked about, and you say that knowledge is power, and consequently, knowledge of self provides self-empowerment.
Yes.
Awesome statement.
Well, it's very critical because basically, look, if we just say, let's look at the knowledge we have of ourselves, and I go over the litany of the knowledge that is programmed in schools, and basically it says you're a victim. Who do you think you are? You have limitations. You can't do all these things. And so most of our education is actually taking away our power. And since if that knowledge is incorrect, then what would be the consequence of putting the correct knowledge in? Well, as soon as you put the knowledge in and that knowledge is useful and powerful, then you start manifesting power from that knowledge. And this is why it's really necessary to gain a more, belief system that's in alignment with the way nature really is than the belief system that we bought through our education, which again is created. Look at the world around us. We're destroying the world. We're destroying each other based on our belief systems, meaning I would question those belief systems. It's killing us.
In our education, we try to say to our kids, be like everyone else because the teacher doesn't have time for that special person that's one of a kind, that's above the rest or below the rest or whatever it is. But you know, when we look at our heroes, they're usually one of a kind.
Absolutely, and it's really fun because those are the people that let go of those belief systems that cutting the tall poppy, that I'm not average, I'm above average, and I can do these things. And the point is, if you can do them, then do them and keep practicing, and whatever they are, they're going to get better and better, whatever skills they might be, because whatever you're capable of doing at some level can add to the society that we live in. And yet, a lot of people just cancel their own belief system themselves by going, oh, I can't do that, or I'm not going to be able to get there. And psychologists tell us that 70% of our thoughts, which are coming from the subconscious, are negative and redundant. So 70% of the thoughts that are coming in your head are actually disempowering you. And we let those thoughts run rampantly, and guess what? Those thoughts are ultimately the thoughts, especially the redundant ones, the ones you repeat, because that's repeating that thought, that energy, that vibration, and every time you repeat it, you make it more real and material. So we have to recognize that it's our own thoughts are telling you why you're not going to get somewhere if you stop and listen to them, because most of our thoughts are actually cutting our legs out from under us.
And know that sometimes you're going to be the odd man out, and so be it.
Yeah, but there's a whole different way of learning to live in harmony with this planet, which we haven't done, because we grew up in a world based on a belief system, like a Darwinian theory belief system, which even if you didn't go to school, you've been ingrained with the meaning of the Darwinian theory, which is basically that life is a struggle for survival with a competition that is endless, and you're always fighting. And guess what? I look around the world, I go, geez, Darwin must be right, because that's the way the world looks. And the fact is, is the world really that way, or is that because everybody believes it, that's the way the world is, and the biology belief reveals it's the latter, that we play our beliefs out, and the world that we create is the world of our beliefs made manifest.
Well, your book is full of awesome statements and making people think. One of the things that turned my life around when I first read your book years ago was a cell can't grow when it's fighting, and a cell is a microcosm of us as human beings.
Yeah, well, that was the fun part. It's actually a fractal image, and that's really hard because fractal is a buzzword. People hear it, but they don't really know. I mean, fractal, sometimes I see pretty pictures and say, that's a fractal. It's like, okay. A fractal is geometry. Geometry is the math of how you put structure into space. So when you look at the world around us, at nature, nature is a physical manifestation of structure in space. Nature is designed by geometry, but not the geometry that we learned in school, which is called Euclidean geometry, the one we did with graph paper and compasses, and we drew cubes and spheres and cones, and we made these images. That kind of geometry isn't related to nature. I mean, when we were 5 years old, we made a Euclidean tree. We made a cylinder with a ball on the top. Those are Euclidean geometry, but that doesn't look like a tree. And it turns out that nature uses a different geometry, and it has the name fractal geometry. And what's unique about this, and this is like lovely and profound, is because fractal geometry uses an equation that repeats itself infinitely, using the same equation and repeating itself leads to images that reappear at different levels of the structure. So as you're doing a geometry, you can have a small structure and a large structure and a larger structure. That because you're repeating the same equations over and over again, that patterns repeat themselves in what they call a self-similar way. That patterns at any level of the organization reflect the same kind of pattern at any other level of the organization. It's sort of like the Russian dolls, where they're like wooden dolls, and you open up one, and inside is another Russian doll. Looks almost like the first one, similar, but not exactly the same. And you open that one up, and inside that is a smaller wooden doll that looks similar, but not exactly the same. And you open that one up, and there's a smaller one. And basically, the images are repeating themselves. Well, this is the conclusion of fractal geometry and why it's important. Fractal geometry is the mathematics that reveals the truth behind as above, so below. That becomes a mathematical reality in fractals. Since nature is fractal in its design, then it's implied that any pattern in nature can be repeated at any different level of its organization. If you study a human cell, a human and a cell are fractal images of each other. The functions of the human body are present in virtually every cell in your body, has all the same functions in the cell as you have in your entire body. A human and a cell are fractal images. Human society is like a body where humans are the cells in a larger thing called humanity. So the nature of fractals, if you understand what's going on in any one level of the fractal, then you have insights to understanding at any other level of the fractal. So if I understand how cells work, I've already got a basic understanding of how humans work. If I have an understanding of how humans work, then I already have a basic understanding of how humanity as a multicellular body would work, because it'd be the same the way human body works. And so the relevance of all that is, here we are living in the world today with 6.5 or 7 billion people on the planet, destroying everything all around. Our extinction is in front of us right now, as scientists are revealing that we're just threatening ourselves and the biosphere. And it's like, wow, what are we going to do? And it's like, here's a joke. There's an old saying through, you know, mystics, the answers lie within. And guess what? Look inside the human body. The human body, which we see as a single entity, is actually not a single entity. The human body is comprised of 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the living entities. We are communities of cells. And the relevance about it is, guess what? You look inside the body. Every cell has a job. Every cell gets paid. Every cell gets health care. There's protections inside and all kinds of things going on. It says, my God, 50 trillion cells have learned to live in harmony for millions of years, and if we understand how they learn to live in harmony, how they as individual sentient beings create jobs and community and support each other, and look at the nature of how they do that, that is a template for how a paltry 6 or 7 billion people on the planet Earth can learn to live in harmony if 50 trillion cells can do it. And this is important because it says that the answers for our survival are already in our body if we understand how a community of 50 trillion cells can live in harmony in a blissed out human where every cell is blissed out at the same time. Imagine a world where every citizen is blissed out at the same time. It's possible. All we have to look at is the body and say, show us the rules, because the cells have already worked it out for millions and millions of years.
I want to go back to something very simple and put this in the minds of our listeners here on BBS. We all know about this. If you think about getting hurt and going to your mama for a kiss to make it better, the thought of that support from mom took the pain away. Same thing you're saying, isn't it?
This is exactly what it's all about. It's what we believe then becomes our reality. Another way of looking at it, I like this one, so you can add it, the same kind of story is a parent has their child on a playground, the child's on a swing. The child falls off the swing, lands on the ground. The first thing the child does is look at the face of the mother. If the mother is scared to death, the child will immediately start crying and be afraid because obviously something must be wrong because they got the reference from the mother that something is wrong, and they start crying. And yet, the same child, if it falls on the ground and looks up and the mother says, oh, that's okay, dust yourself up and get back on the swing, the kid will get back on the swing like nothing happened at all. And so all of a sudden you say, well, what was the difference in the reality of a kid who was crying out of control, hysterical, and falling off and thinks it's hurt itself, and the same kid that could have just dusted itself off and gotten back up? And the answer is the programming and the perceptions. And in this case, the child uses the perception of the parent to gauge their own program at this point. And it just shows you how valuable those perceptions are, because it's a difference of finding life as horror and scary and filled with illness and disease, or a life that could be, total health and happiness and harmony in the Garden of Eden. And the difference between those two is just a matter of perception.
And as adults and scientists, we call it the placebo effect.
And it's very powerful, because even medicine recognizes that up to, minimum of 40% and up to two-thirds or more of all healing on this planet had nothing to do with the healing modality, the doctor, the technique, the drug, the medicine. It all had to do with the placebo effect, that 40 to 60% or more of all healing is just in the mind and nothing more than that. And while we bring up the placebo effect, it's important because most people are out there say, oh yeah, the placebo effect, I have a good, happy thought and it heals me. Yeah, that's true. But then there's something called the nocebo effect that we don't talk about. And that is, it's saying the same thing, but in reverse. It says a negative or scary thought can get me sick or can kill me. And it turns out, nocebo, placebo actually are saying this. It's the power of perception. Positive or negative, it doesn't make any difference. It's equally powerful, but it goes in opposite directions.
We have 2 minutes, and that's a terrible thing to say to you. But tell me quickly about your new book, and then we'll go out with some music. And I have a dozen more things to ask you about, so we have to have you back.
I would love to do that, Sherry. Quickly, going out the door, new book is called Spontaneous Evolution. As the first book talks about how personal beliefs from our family and our community shape our individual lives, Spontaneous Evolution says civilization, which is a multicellular organism where we are cells in the body, the beliefs of civilization are cultivated in us, and then we create those beliefs in the world. So what we see going on right now is not a real world image. It's just playing out the beliefs we've been programmed with. And Spontaneous Evolution says those beliefs are changing. The world is changing. We're going through an evolution. People are very much afraid because they see all the crises. And my answer to that in Spontaneous Evolution is don't be afraid. Welcome this. Because it says we're eliminating the type of beliefs that have led us to this edge of destruction and now beginning to integrate new beliefs that will sustain human civilization and actually bring it not based on survival but lead civilization to thrival, that we can return this back to the garden with the new science and the new beliefs that civilization is being offered right now.
Bruce Lipton, thank you for your time. People, go out and get this book, The Biology of Belief. If you're ready, you'll smile all the way through it and your body will be joyous. It's a great book. And thank you for joining us. I don't want to end this interview, but I don't have any choice. Thank you for your time. Please join us on Thursday for Vocal Profiling Live. The last 2 weeks we've been bringing you information about the presidential candidates, their intent, and their health, and will continue in that vein with an emphasis on voting tendencies and truth. So Thursday on BBS Radio, 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern. And don't forget to download your free vocal profiling program. That's our gift to you. Nano, N-A-N-O, voice.org. Thank you, Dr. Lipton.
Thank you, Sharon.
Absolute pleasure listening to you. We'll talk later.